Hello and welcome to the Licensed and Queer podcast, where we're on a mission to uncover why James Bond appeals so much to LGBTQ plus people. Why not see 007 from a different angle?
Hello, this is Anthony Lobregellis, and I'm here as usual with my husband David Lobregellis, MBE, as I have to say. And you're not reading your calendar wrong. It isn't the end of the month as much as we'd all like to be through January.
It's not that bad.
We're only halfway through January. but we just wanted to do
We're not even doing dry January.
No.
That would be unbearable.
We've done it once, didn't we, the year we're getting married?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just because we wanted to like have the health kit.
Be trim.
To fit into our suits. But anyway, we just over the Christmas and New Year period, I think it was in the New Year actually, we released the information about Time to Donate, which is our third annual James Bond movie marathon fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd do a bit of an episode today to talk a little bit more about that, share the schedule for the day, why we're doing it and all of that kind of stuff, and even share a related cocktail from one of the films. So
over the last 2 years, the Licensed Queer community has raised nearly, in fact, if you go on Just Giving, it is exactly £3,995, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the reason there's a bit of a disparity there between, if you add up the individual totals, it's a bit less, but I think it doesn't include the Just Giving amount.
The gift
so
aid.
If you're a gift aid, that's yeah. it. So if you're in the UK and you press a button and you're a UK taxpayer, it actually adds on gift aid.
20%, isn't it, gift aid, I think.
It might be 25%. Yeah. So it's quite a lot. So in long story short, the Licensed Queer community since May 2022 has raised nearly £4,000, which is pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, and that was for, if you're unaware, the first year we watched all the Roger Moore Bond films in one
sitting. With minimal breaks.
Second time we've done that, actually. And we did that in
the first time we did it out of grief because Roger had just died. And that was a way to kind of
process that. Wasn't for charity, that was just for us over New Year's.
Yeah, we weren't even doing Licensed to Queer at that point. No.
And then when we did it for Licensed to Queer, we raised money for UNICEF. And then last year, 2023, we did it again, but with the Pierce Brosnan films. Mm. And Pierce Brosnan was also a patron, like Sir Roger Moore, of UNICEF. And so together, like David said, nearly £4,000. And I did put a stat online that essentially means that the Licensed to Queer community have funded at least 1.2 million water purification tablets.
Wow.
To make sure that people in children, particularly in places where it's needed, have safe access to safe drinking water. That's so great. When you, I think it's really important to like say what that actually makes a big difference and what it actually buys. But this year we're doing it for a different charity.
We are. We're doing it for a charity that's really, really close to our hearts, and it's we actually looked around for several charities, didn't we?
Yeah.
But I was adamant that we were going to do something for suicide prevention.
Yeah.
And we'll go through, if you haven't seen it already, the specific charity and why we chose them in just a minute. But I think I know it's safe to say that suicide prevention is something very, very close to both of our hearts, isn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, probably a lot of, it doesn't just touch LGBTQ plus IA plus people, but obviously a disproportionate amount of young queer people consider suicide. Mm. And that's why it's really important to us. I have to say that one positive thing about my coming out experience and my years in the closet is something that's something I never considered. I didn't have healthy feelings about what being gay would be for me. Mm. I thought it would be a life of darkness, and growing up in Section 28 and during the AIDS crisis, you just thought, if I'm gay, I'll die. But I didn't ever think that means I need to kill myself. But but I know that it was different for you.
It was different for me, but before we continue, just a couple of things. We are talking about suicide. I noticed that you just self-censored yourself.
Yes, because working with this charity since we've announced it, and I think we should just say, we'll go into it more, but we're working with a charity called Papyrus. In working with them, we've got access to a lot of really useful material, and within it is guides about the language you should use, and one of the things they suggest is around imagery and wording, and that you shouldn't say commit suicide. And part of the reason for that is because obviously we want to frame things in more positive language, but it's actually not a criminal act to commit suicide.
Hasn't been in the UK since the, I think, mid-1960s.
Yeah, and framing it in a discussion of something that is illegal or like a bad thing to do stops people talking about getting help. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's really important to speak about it with positive language in order to like break down the stigma of suicide, so that people who are having mental health crises and feel hopeless know that there is hope if they talk to people. Yeah. And our language does matter, and that is and this goes on to the point you're going to make in a second. Language is so important, and framing things in a positive way is so important for anything that in the past has been seen as difficult. If we just use more open language, we can have conversations about stuff.
And also acknowledge that we're going to get it wrong.
Yeah.
And I've got no doubt that during the course of this campaign we're running, that we are going to get it wrong at some point.
And say the wrong words. And
so you might use the phrase accidentally, like commit suicide.
Yeah.
Instead of take your own life. Yeah. There are other alternatives as well. We're going to be doing lots of coverage of this between now and the event itself, and possibly afterwards as well. But as Anthony said, the charity that we're going to be raising money for is Papyrus, and we'll go for the reasons why we chose those in a minute. But their vision is, they envision a society which speaks openly about suicide and obviously has the resources to help young people who have suicidal thoughts.
It's a charity that supports young suicide.
Specifically, yeah.
Like younger people who are struggling with suicidal thoughts.
But just to go back to what we were saying about using the right language, I'm very mindful at the moment of there being a discussion throughout the bottom community of trigger warnings, which has been sparked by a release from the British Film Institute. There's a if you've somehow missed all of this, there's a season of John Barry scored films on at the BFI. I might try and pop and see one or two of them myself, but they've put a warning on out on the website, kind of catch-all warning to say that there are outdated attitudes and representations in these films that will trigger certain people, or rather will offend. And people have taken umbrage at the language, and this is not the place to do that, to be honest, because it's again, like all of these things, we've had a few of these in the last year or so. It's a storm in a teacup that's been stirred up by the right-wing media.
It's also like paradoxical in a way, like someone fans balk at books being edited, but a few sentences that prevent the film being edited is also despicable to them. Yeah. Like, pick a side, people.
I mean, I've almost commented on this online, but I thought whatever you post is just going to fan the flames, and I don't want to do the right-wing media's job for them, essentially.
But I just think yeah. Trigger warnings. I'm thinking about something that's happened with me and you in this past week or so. As we were just talking about, me and David have both had issues with our mental health. I'm going through a bit of a mental health blip at the moment. And as such, you gave me a trigger warning and said you shouldn't watch that document, that drama about the post office.
Yeah.
Because it will upset you.
It does involve suicide.
And
yeah.
It's not just about suicide, but like the feeling of helplessness that some of the people feel, and how like low what happens to some of the characters. You know, at this moment in time,
you would be totally triggered by that.
Deal with it, and I think that's a positive thing.
I looked into the research behind trigger warnings, and it's totally valid to say what I just said. You know, you can be triggered by this. People who are in emotional states, you know, like you've got a, and I'm sure you won't mind me sharing this, you've got a depressed brain at the moment, yeah. and you're having various forms of treatment for that. You are possibly going to be made a lot worse because of the state that your brain is in at the moment by seeing things that are distressing. So yeah. I go through lots of periods of this, and I'll share my side in a moment. And there are certain things I know I have to do to avoid being triggered. In the longer term, this is what the research says, and there's an interesting meta-analysis of this. If you go on, if you're really interested and you want to actually see the science behind this, there's a meta-analysis from August 2023 of all the research that's been done so far on trigger warnings that concluded that actually in the long term, it's probably not great for people's mental health to completely avoid everything that's going to trigger them, because
you don't psychological, get resilient to
exactly,
it.
You don't get resilient to it. So the psychological concept of avoidance, James Bond is very well practicing avoidance, running away from his problems constantly, drowning them in alcohol and inconsequential sex. And I've written quite a lot about this over the years, but avoidance is actually really bad for you in the long term, because you don't build up your resistance and your resilience to things that can cause you psychological harm. But in the short term, trigger warnings are actually really helpful for people who are going through things, really bad things at that point.
And like, and also generally, isn't there, there's like, I remember like you and our friend Jess used to like like warn me like, oh Andrew, this is a film that you should watch because like it will kill the rainbows and the unicorns. And
yeah, because it will have a different worldview. And, yeah. and there have been things that I've watched over the years which have left me in a complete funk for days or even weeks and months afterwards.
Yeah.
And I've probably emerged a little bit stronger for watching them, but they've put me really through the mill at the time, and I have dwelt on them too much because I've not been in a great state emotionally at that point.
Yeah, and there's things like, I think we've mentioned it before on the podcast, but there's certain things where, like, for example, in the middle of the pandemic, I didn't want to watch It's a Sin because yeah. I knew that the AIDS crisis was a terrible time and I didn't want to feel like that.
You still haven't watched it?
And no, and then you equally, you didn't like The Leftovers.
Oh yeah, yeah. I could only watch series one of The Leftovers and I found that a struggle.
Yeah.
Because, not because it wasn't brilliant, because it was. And I was
but
obsessed
because
with
of the time period in which we were in.
Yeah, I just found it too raw.
And there's time periods, like for example, during like different lockdown periods, David and I made the conscious effort to not listen to as much news coverage because it was making us feel
anxious. I still
anxious.
Don't. I rely on you for my news, and you filter it for me.
Yeah, and then similarly, like now, there's times when I'm feeling a bit, like at the moment when I'm struggling a bit, I need to get some news coverage, so randomly I tend to listen to Japanese news just because it gives the world...
It's a bit more of a perspective, isn't yeah, it? A zoomed out point of view.
Yeah, it gives it's less sort of things that are impacting you in a troubling way, and it's looked at from a different viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So I find that quite
it's useful. A bit more at a distance, isn't it? Well, yeah. physical distance as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so I think with all that in mind.
And I think the trigger, and just on that trigger thing, I think some of those things are for those Bond films, I think it is important because there are scenes in those films where if you've been the victim of a sexual assault.
You probably won't want to watch Bond forcing himself on Pussy Galore and Goldfinger.
Or it's having someone whip a bikini around her neck.
Something I've noticed a lot, and this is credit to John Barry, you know, which is what this season of films is celebrating. John Barry makes palatable a lot of scenes in Bond that without the music, and this goes right up into the living daylights, the scene in the Ferris wheel. He makes palatable with these really lush romantic music scenes, which actually are about sexual coercion. And so for people who've been through those sorts of things, that would not be very pleasant.
Yeah, and at least people gives people the option, doesn't it?
To, yeah.
And that's totally. All it is in day. And if it is unpalatable to you that it has that in, go and get yourself some popcorn and come in after that warning's been on the film.
Yeah,
just exactly. Like, this is the thing.
The people who are perhaps, who are saying, I'm mentally resilient enough. Why is everyone being a snowflake? That kind of thing. The irony is that they're being snowflakes about something that's probably about 10 seconds at the start of a film.
And
it might not even be on the film. It might just be in the publicity for it as well.
And
so silly.
Generally, I think a lot of problems in the world would be solved by people thinking about themselves
less
and actually consider someone else's viewpoint. And how they choose to live their lives, that kind of thing.
So we are thinking of other people, obviously, with raising money for Papyrus. But at the same time, I am thinking of my own experiences. And I don't think there's anything really that I don't want to go there. Maybe there is. but I have written quite openly on License to Queer about my thoughts of wanting to take my own life, especially in my early 20s, when I thought the only way out from being gay was to end my own life. And I particularly wrote about that in my queer review of You Only Live Twice. And I've returned to it several times, but perhaps most notably also in my queer review of No Time to Die. It's interesting how much the Daniel Craig films, I saw a post online about this the other day, the Daniel Craig films have characters who do take their own lives or seriously contemplate taking their own lives. And this does run through the Bond series and particularly the Fleming books as well. Bond does have a bit of a, not a suicide fixation, but he does think about ending his own life quite a lot. Even the novel of Moonraker, he contemplates ending it all as a way of resolving the mission until the girl pipes up and she says, hang on a second, you don't have to kill yourself.
Well, it's almost like a corporate policy with the cyanide.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah, with MI6.
Yeah, like if you're going to get captured. Mm-hmm. And you see this also in the Dublin, I think, book as well, where like they're saying, like, why didn't you use your like suicide pill?
Die another day through cyanide tablet, through cyanide tooth away years ago.
Yeah.
So suicide is something that you can't get away from, you can't avoid. You know, perhaps the whole of James Bond should have a suicide trigger warning because it is. And in fact, when we've been looking back through, when we were writing the coverage of this event, we were consciously trying to avoid as many references to death as possible, even to the point of choosing which cocktail we were going to make for this episode. It was really difficult to avoid anything that had associations of suicide. In the end, we just have to accept that there are so many things that have connotations of suicide, and it is about normalising, or I prefer the term usualising, talking about this sort of stuff, and it's really important.
No, it really is, and some of the images as well that you looked at as well, didn't you? Look at some of the, because one of the things that the charity talks about is about using positive imagery, and some of the images that you might use from the titles have a lot of death imagery.
Totally. So I posted online using the titles of the five films that we're going to be watching for this particular marathon. And yeah, I thought, oh, someone who's in a fragile state of mind might not actually want us to be using that sort of imagery. So I think we can probably be a bit too oversensitive. And that's why I say it's brilliant that this particular charity, Papyrus, their mission is to make sure that people can talk openly about this. But if there is anything that I've posted online that is perhaps a bit triggering, then, you know, I apologise in the short term, but hopefully in the longer term you'll kind of see what our aims are.
Yeah. And we'll give it at the end as well. But one of the things that Papyrus do to help people is they run a 24/7 hope line, which is the helpline. It's called Hopeline 24/7, and if you're based in the UK, you can access that at any time by calling 0800 068 4141, and they have advisors on the line 24/7 to help people. And it's obviously for children and young people under the age of 35 who are experiencing thoughts of suicide, and for anybody else who knows a child or young person who they know is considering suicide, and that you can call and get help for signposting and all that kind of stuff. So some of the money that we'll be raising will help to staff that line. Yeah.
It's only fairly recently that they've actually managed to make that 24/7.
Yeah.
And that's really important. If you Google Papyrus, you actually get that number before anything else. So it's really, really easy to get hold of. And I think that's probably the most important thing. And I have written this in some of the pieces that I've written. I've often put in, you know, further information, and I will definitely add in now. the papyrus number, the Hopeline 24/7, because the most important thing is to talk to somebody about this. I didn't talk to anybody in my early 20s, and there were a couple of times where it came pretty close to me taking my own life, and those obviously stay with you.
Yeah.
I have known a couple of people who have taken their own lives as well, and you can't help but think, could I have done anything differently? And personally, I've tried not to beat myself up about that, because I don't think in either of those situations I could have actually done anything differently.
Yeah.
And like, I can't help think that.
And with the thing that I'm going through at the moment, like, I've said to David that I did have thoughts just before Christmas about, is everything that's good in my life happened? And like, is it not worth being here anymore? But talking about it instantly made it, I didn't instantly make it better, but it made it manageable. And I've spoken about it with a few people now, and I've always experienced positivity in terms of people like wanting to help and support you, friends, work colleagues, obviously yourself, my brother. So I think there's very few people. Like, I think it's probably a near impossibility if you share that you're having these thoughts where someone would act in a way that would be harmful towards you. So that's why it's important to speak up, because you're, like, 1 million times out of 1 million and one times going to get someone who's going to help you rather than hurt you.
Totally. Before we get stuck into the detail of actually what we're going to be doing on the day, and I'm aware we haven't given out the date, if people haven't seen online yet, shall we have a cocktail?
Yes.
We've got all the ingredients here.
Yep. We are making a cocktail called No Time to Daiquiri.
Which is basically just a daiquiri.
A daiquiri. But the recipe, this recipe is on License to Queer already. And it does use a very specialist rum on the website, which is really difficult to get hold of unless you go to like an online retailer. The rum we use on the website is Rum de Santiago, which is a, as it says, a Cuban rum that is made in Santiago, which is where Paloma meets Bond.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's where No Time to Die is Cuba Sini Set. It's not Havana, it is Santiago.
Yeah. So that's why we chose that one. And it's a really, really good rum that we bought when we was in Cuba in Christmas 2020.
Alas, we haven't been back to Cuba to pick up another bottle.
So instead, we're doing it with Havana Club 7-year-old, which is a Cuban rum. So I just think to make this work, you should probably have at least a Cuban rum. And a daiquiri, if you don't know, is just rum, lime juice and sugar syrup. We sometimes mix it up and use agave syrup, or you can even use like maple syrup, which is good, or like golden syrup.
We're just using sugar today.
We're just using cane sugar syrup today.
We always use upon the sugar as well. I know something like a sweet daiquiri, but that's not.
And we always like do more lime than sugar. So I've juiced 2 limes, and then I'm going to put in 100 mil.
100 for each drink.
No. For the two of us, 50 mil each.
So that's a strong daiquiri.
50 mil of the rum.
Or as they say in Cuba, the ron.
The ron, yeah, like rum in Cuba in Spanish is ron, or like as in Weasley.
Gentry's. Or Burgundy.
Yeah, and then I just do a dash of the sugar syrup in a cocktail shaker with ice.
Yeah.
And then pour in the lime juice, and then I stir it, not shake it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I stir it with
That's why yours always tastes stronger.
I stir it with a knife, yeah.
A knife? Yeah. You mean we've got at least 3 cocktail stirrers.
And the knife that I cut the limes with.
And you decide to save on the washing up
by stirring it. Stir it with a knife.
A big knife. That's not a knife.
Deadly.
That's a knife.
And then, perhaps not fitting for Joe Bond, we always serve our daiquiris in this house because I've got some really lovely Kath Kidson Care Bear cocktail coupes.
You totally need to take a photo of those for when this podcast goes live.
Yeah.
So they can see how unbondy our cocktail, our daiquiri glasses are.
I just, growing up, I loved Care Bears, and particularly Good Luck Bear. And when I saw these on sale in Cath Kidston.
They are pretty great glasses, to be honest, for a daiquiri, but they are very not bond. Yeah. I love it.
You can't really tell the Care Bears unless you look really closely.
No, they do just look like floral, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and then you just strain into, it should look quite golden. This is, you should use dark rum, not white rum. I don't think Cuba makes white rum. I think Havana Club do a white rum, but yeah, golden, should be golden. And yeah.
Let's have a taste then.
There we go.
That's how it goes. Well, that's really...
very limey.
Limey.
Yeah, I used two limes. And that's on the cocktail page.
You have to take the back over here.
Yep.
There we go. So,
and that's one of the new cocktails. Well, not new, because we've already done it. That's one of the cocktails that we'll be drinking on the day itself, along with a new, along with cocktails for each of the other films. So this is the No Time to Die cocktail.
Let's run through the day itself, and then we'll talk more about the specific aims of the charity that we're working with. So as Anthony's explained, first year we did something similar to this. We raised money for a charity by watching all of Roger Moore's films, which sounds really great, and it was really great, but it's also quite a Herculean task to watch 7 2-hour-plus movies in one go with minimal breaks in between. Last year we did Pierce Brosnan's films, which is more manageable at 4 films, but we did make life difficult for ourselves by adding additional challenges like costume changes and two types of food, original recipes by Edward Biddulph, and we also did drinks in between, 2 drinks in between. I think we'll ease up on the drinks this time, because if we do 2 drinks for 5 films, I think we're going to be in trouble.
And particularly, like, say, for example, if we did the first film with that signature drink from that film at 9
Oh, no, Lord. So, yeah. So, what's going to happen is we're going to watch all 5 Daniel Craig films in order. I'm not sure anyone has ever tried this before. I'm sure a couple of people have tried it, but we've never tried it before. So, it'd be interesting to see, because these are the only Bond films which sort of link on from each other, and let's not get stuck into the whole retconning and everything else. But they do sort of have a kind of arc as a narrative.
What's the 5 of a trilogy?
Quintrilogy. I think that's a word. Yeah. It is now. So we're going to start with Casino Royale early in the morning. Schedule it for 9 a.m. GMT.
Well, let's
do the date first.
The date is Sunday, the 26th of May, which is the Sunday before spring bank holiday, the late bank holiday that we get in the UK here, and it's also the day before Memorial Day in America. So we think those on either side of the pond will be able to take part, because most people will not have work the next day.
That's the philosophy. So,
and that's the same sort of date we do all these every year.
If you are in the US, say if you're in New York, it does mean getting up at 4 a.m. if you want to join us for Casino Royale. However, we will be going all day. So you can join us for 1, 2, 3, or 5 films. It's entirely up to you.
Our friends Hannah and Maz have already said that they're going to join us.
They're going to join us as well.
And so they haven't watched all of the Daniel Craig.
No, they haven't seen Quantum or Spectre.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be entertaining. So we're going to watch all... I'm not going to go through all the timings here. It's all on the website. We're going to start at 9 a.m. and I think finish around midnight at the end of No Time to Die. So it's at least, 15, 16-hour marathon, something like that. I worked out the Daniel Craig films add up to just over 700 minutes.
Yeah.
But we are going to have breaks in between. We will be doing food
and
more details on that to follow. Drinks, more details on that to follow,
including some new cocktail recipes. There are,
we're going to create some new ones.
There are some cocktails on the thing already that we'll use, such as this one here from No Time to Daiquiri. There's a really great one already on the website from Quantum, which we're going to do.
Yeah, the Dominic Green one.
Oh, and I was thinking more of the Strawberry
Fields.
One,
there's a couple of great ones for Quantum.
Yeah, so, but we'll make some new ones for the other films too. And the one thing we're struggling with, so if you can give us some help, our costume changes, because unlike the Pierce Brosnan era and the Roger Moore, the costumes are all a bit sort of like, they're fashionable, but they're a bit non...
They're sort of, not out of this world, are they? No, they're not really iconic in that, you know... Daniel Craig's Bond probably wears a greater range of clothing than any other Bond. He wears a lot more casual wear.
I think the only thing we've thought... stuff
that you could imagine actually wearing.
The only thing we've thought of is like a prison jumpsuit, because that happened a few times. And
where's the prison jumpsuit?
When Silver's in his... also when Blofeld's held in his...
Yeah, true, as well. True.
And then also dressing up as a policeman.
Yeah, from Scott. So a couple of people suggested that one online already. So costumes are going
give
to
us
be,
some help.
And I'm not prepared to spend £700 or however much it is on a jumper from Oliver Brown just to do the last one. If Oliver Brown want to sponsor us
or donate to charity,
or do, you know, then that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, so that's that. And obviously we'll do, depending on, because they come on and off Amazon Prime at the minute, but if they are on Amazon Prime at the time, we will do watch along. Yeah.
And if they're not on Amazon Prime, we'll figure out another way to do it. Like last time we had a Zoom running.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And we chatted with people because they'd just gone off Amazon Prime by then as well. That's the event in its broadest outline. Yeah. We are going to be drip feeding the specifics between now and May. And that date again, for anyone who's not remembered?
Sunday the 26th of May, starting at 9 a.m. British GMT. Summer time. No.
Oh, is it, no, it, was be, it actually British Summer time,
yeah,
by then?
Matt March, isn't it? It'll be British Summer time. Yeah.
You know me, I'm not very good at time.
Yeah, so 9 a.m. British Summer time. You can donate already if you... so wish to, and you can you can find all the information on License to Queer, but you can also, I've made a Tiny Earl again, so you can go to tinyearl.com/LTQTTD2024, so that's License to Queer, time to donate 2024. That's again tinyearl.com/LTQTTD2024, and all money raised will go to Papyrus.
Directly to Papyrus.
And Papyrus envisions a society which speaks openly about suicide and has the resources to help young people who have suicidal thoughts. Mm. They believe that young suicides are preventable. Those who are touched personally by a young suicide have a unique contribution to their work. No young person should have to suffer alone with thoughts or feelings of hopelessness, and nobody should have to go through the heartbreak of losing a young person to suicide, and everyone can play a role in preventing young suicide. And some of the things they do, as well as staff that helpline that we talked about, is that they educate schools,
yeah,
and social workers, employers. I was editing a piece at work for our wellbeing manager on Friday. And one of the resources that she had signposted was to Papyrus.
Oh, really?
So you will find them in maybe if your workplace offers sort of signposting for suicide prevention, you'll find that. Obviously, they help people up to the age of 35, but anybody can call if they're worried about a young person and suicide, and they will help and signpost. And we thought that was really important, particularly because a disproportionate amount, as we mentioned at the start of the podcast, a disproportionate amount of queer youth will at one time consider suicide.
Yeah, it is a frightening statistic, actually. It's about a quarter of LGBTQ plus people. Most of the surveys concur it's around that figure. A quarter will seriously consider ending their own lives.
Yep.
So it is something really, really close to our hearts. Not just our hearts as well. Daniel Craig himself has donated to the charity and spoken publicly about the charity. So it was actually a group, I think it was called Four Dads. They decided to do a very, very, very long walk for charity because their daughters had all chosen to end their own lives.
Yeah.
And Daniel Craig donated £10,000 of his own money.
Yeah.
So... another James Bond connection then. Even if we didn't have that connection, I think that we'd probably have chosen Papyrus, having looked, which isn't to say there are other suicide prevention charities, but it is the UK's foremost suicide prevention charity.
For young people, yeah. And
especially because young people are disproportionately affected by suicide. Young men as well as LGBTQ plus people.
And as we mentioned, when we were thinking about the themes of the films, it just felt like that's a very sort of a prominent theme of sort of hopelessness throughout them. So that's why we wanted to talk about it, because there is always hope. And again, that number that I mentioned at the top of the, in the middle of the show, is 0800 068 4141. And that's for Papyrus's Hope Line 24/7. So all of their advisors are trained to help focus on staying safe from suicide, and the training offers them to provide advice and support to help people who call move forward and stay alive.
That's most of what we want to talk about for now. As I say, we are going to be drip feeding the details, and every one of these episodes we do between now and the event itself, we'll also be making one of the cocktails.
Yep.
And making sure we post the recipe online.
If they're not there already, which some of them are.
Some of them are, but there are going to be some new ones. Something I just want to flag is that we are going to have several very noted members of the Bond community involved in this, including Billy Robertson. If you don't know him as Billy Robertson, you'll know him as Billy's Bond Art. He's a universally adored artwork, and we have several of his original pieces around our house.
Yep.
Including one that we actually bought
during the first
one of these events. So Billy has already very kindly said that he will donate sales on the day of the event to the Licensed Queer fundraiser, which is brilliant, because that accounted for several hundred pounds worth. I think it's about, I can't remember that. It's
£800 or £900 of the first fundraiser.
Of the first fundraiser we did, so a massive amount, probably about a quarter of the fundraising total in itself.
Yeah.
So we're really, really grateful to Billy.
And we're grateful of other people who've supported via giving their time, Edward, in the last fundraiser, doing the food and the food recipes. So, we don't... it'd be very easy for ourselves to pat ourselves on the back.
Yeah, Ruben's been helping with the logos as well.
It'd be really easy to pat ourselves on the back and say, look, haven't we done amazingly raising all this money?
No, it's a real community effort.
It's a community effort. Everyone's raised this money.
And lots of people. I think it's worth saying this now, that it's not the amount. Auntie and I both donated £50 because it's our event and we're in a position financially to be able to donate £50 to charity, something that's particularly close to our hearts, especially. But we know that not everyone will be able to afford to do that. So even if it's just £5 or £10 or whatever, then it is really, really... we're really, really grateful for that.
Yeah, and what I will do as well throughout the period now is just share more information, like I said at the top of the show, about the money that we've raised for UNICEF. That's paid for, that money that we raised there could have paid for 1.2 million of those water treatment tablets. I will try and share information about what amounts of money will help, because essentially we're helping keep that phone line running. But there's lots of other things that they do, such as train people, run training sessions in schools, there's just keeping their website up. There's loads of things that cost money, and a very small amount just go a long way. So whatever you can give, we'd be really, really grateful.
My Care Bear glass is empty, Anthony.
You need refilling.
I do. My Care Bears need refilling.
We'll get another daiquiri made. But in the meantime, thank you for listening to the Licensed to Queer podcast.
What's the web address again so people can find it?
It is www.tinyearl.com/LTQTTD2024. So that's tinyearl.com/LTQTTD2024. And please, anything you can donate will be much appreciated. In the meantime, you can follow all of the preparations for the fundraiser over on the Licensed to Queer social media accounts, X, formerly Twitter, and Instagram as Licensed to Queer, and now on TikTok, and same username again. And obviously there's information about Papyrus's mission and also the fundraiser over on the License to Queer website.
And Papyrus have been quite proactive in retweeting things.
And commenting to people who are taking part.
So follow them on social media as well.
Yeah, I'm just finding them. They are at Papyrus_UK on Threads and just Papyrus. Oh, no, actually, Papyrus_UK. And then Papyrus_UK.